Well, if you have a Bible, find Revelation 17 and 18. And we're going to go through two chapters today. And don't panic. I have to be at the hospital at 11, so they can go without me for one Sunday, right? It is amazing we're approaching the end of this study. And just a reminder that you've probably heard this study different than what you heard growing up. Different than what I heard, even what I was taught in college. And if you read the Left Behind series books, you've already known that we haven't followed that one bit. And so this is apocalyptic literature, highly symbolic. I think without knowing the Old Testament, you can't interpret Revelation properly. And so to me, it's been an exciting study, an encouraging study of the end times, which we are living now. This book does have some future, which we're going to get into today a little bit, and in especially in the coming last few weeks of this study. But this is not just a book for way, way, way out there. This is the history of the church, and it's been a great, great study as we started the letters to the churches, and even now as we begin to approach the end of the book. Today we're going to be titled this message, Followers of the Lamb Living in the Dragon's World. And that's truly where we live. We live in the dragon's world. The scriptures call, especially Revelation, Satan the great red dragon. And he's a real being. He's the power behind the thrones. He's the one that hates the church. He attacks true followers of the Lamb. He hates us with a hatred and a passion that we can probably never imagine. We can't imagine the holiness of God, and it's hard for us to grasp the hatred of this arch enemy of Jesus and the church. So we as followers of the Lamb are truly living in this dragon's world. June of 1944. How many of you were alive in June of 1944? You're afraid to admit it, right? Right? Okay, well, great. Well, you look good for your age. Yeah. It was the largest amphibious invasion in history. Over 150,000 troops stormed the beaches of Normandy. 15,000 airborne soldiers dropped in. Many, of course, came in on those boats. But some parachuted in, but some went in these gliders made out of plywood. Isn't it fascinating? I think it was some 100 gliders, if I remember correctly, made out of plywood, were towed behind these planes. They cut the tow, and they glided in behind enemy lines. Some of these plywood gliders held 13 soldiers. Some of them held two or three soldiers and a jeep or an anti-tank gun. Absolutely amazing. They took reconnaissance photos months earlier, but those photos were when there were no leaves on the trees. And now there were leaves on the trees, so as the gliders came in, they had to find a place to land. It was hard for them to find a place to land because the leaves made it more difficult to see. One surviving pilot spoke of, as they were gliding over, they were shot at, and when the German soldiers, when they got closer to them, the attack became increased. And when they landed, they had to group together and fight off these German soldiers. And what it did was, it drew some German soldiers away from where the main attack was to have to fight on two fronts, so to speak. But the point of that is, some of these soldiers were actually flown in behind enemy lines. That's where God has put you and God has put me. We are living behind enemy lines. We're not in a place of total safety. We're in a place where we are fired upon. We are in a place where we are put smack dab right in the middle of the enemy. The book of Revelation has not made it easy. It has not lied to us. It has told us if you are truly a follower of the Lamb, it is going to be hard. Those that are on the narrow road and few find it, it also says that road is hard. The broad road is easy. When you go along the stream of the devil's world and you follow where everybody else is following, that's an easy world. But when you follow the Lamb, you are hated, you are attacked to various degrees. And again, I've mentioned it 100 times, in America, we're an anomaly. For some reason, we have not faced the suffering that many have in our world. But we know that it is coming. We're going to see a little bit of that today. So we are right in the enemy's territory. So Revelation 17 and 18, I wanted to do these together because I think they both are basically complementing one another. It exposes the world of the great dragon. It promises the defeat of the world and the culture that follows the great dragon. And it challenges us as followers of the Lamb to be sure that we come out of the world that we live in. So the first point this morning is simply the dragon and his world. And again, a lot of this is repetition, but God knows that we need it over and over again. So in these chapters, John sees two main characters. God shows him two main characters. It is the beast and it is the great prostitute. Let's talk about the beast first of all. We've talked about him all through this book. Look in chapter 17. We're going to be kind of not going one verse one all the way through. We're going to be jumping around. So if you have a Bible, it'll help you stay alert today. Notice verse 8 of chapter 17. The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to rise from the bottomless pit and go to destruction. He is talking about the beast, which is Satan. The beast is also called the government and the thrones which he empowers. He is the great red dragon. He is the power behind all evil nations, kingdoms, thrones, and dictators. Look at verse 8 again. It says that this beast, Satan, was and is not, and is about to rise from this bottomless pit. Satan reigned over the nations until Christ came and defeated him on the cross. He was not. But then he is still fighting today, and he will rise again in much greater way as God gives him that freedom towards the very, very end. So he is powerful today, but he is restrained. That's what it means there when it simply says that he was and isn't and is still to come. And remember, he's always imitating Jesus, who is and was and is to come. So we are living in this world. He is powerful. He is permitted at the very end to go on this onslaught. In fact, let me jump to chapter 20, verses 7 to 8, and just show us that there seems to be a time in the end when God gives him more freedom. And when the 1,000 years are ended, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations that are at the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them for battle. Their number is like the sand of the sea. And we'll get to that chapter and explain that. But he is going to be let loose in a much greater way and a greater attack upon his world and upon Christians. That's why I always say that even though America is an anomaly, it is going to get worse. So if we have troubles in this life today with these little things we struggle with, we better prepare ourselves because it is going to get worse if we are allowed to live in this time when the great red dragon is released in a much greater way. Now look in verses 9 to 14. Now these are difficult verses here, so I am not going to try to explain all of them, though there are explanations. Basically, verse 9 to 14, it's nothing new. Satan simply uses government and thrones and dictators to carry out his purpose. You talk about the kings there and the kings that go away and the new kings that come. That is simply, look at verse 13, these are of one mind and they hand over their power and authority to the beast. Satan uses nations and dictators and presidents and whoever you want to call them to carry out his purposes to attack the Lamb and attack the Lamb's church. Nothing new. In fact, he attacks his people. Look back in verse 6, verse B. And I saw the woman, I'll explain that in a minute, drunk with blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. That's what Satan instigates nations to do, to hate Christians and to do whatever he can to cause them pain, suffering, and to eventually kill them, whether it's to throw them in prison, to starve them to death, to burn them at the stake, to be eaten to the lions, which has happened all through the history of man. And it's in our world today, many countries, there are Christians today who are in jail and who are in prison, and it's going to come to our land eventually. We know that for sure. But I want you to see verse 16 of chapter 17. Here is an amazing verse, which is absolutely insightful for you to grab, especially I think for young people to grab. Look at verse 16, chapter 17. And the 10 horns that you saw, those are just simply nations and dictators and leaders that Satan uses, and the beast will hate the prostitute. We'll get to the prostitute in a second, but that's the worldly culture that follows the beast. They will make her, the people that follow the beast, desolate and naked, and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. Now, what does that simply mean? That means that the dragon himself will turn on those who follow him. That's what that is saying. He instigates leaders and dictators to push his agenda. The world and the culture follows the devil's agenda, but verse 16 tells us there is coming a time, and it's even partially true today, that he turns on those who follow him. That is an insightful verse. There is not one ounce of compassion in Satan. He will turn on you if you follow the devil, if you follow his world, and you live for the here and the now, and you live for pleasure, and what's in it for you, and you don't care about God, you don't care about the Bible, it's all making money, it's all being popular, it's all being friends with everybody, whatever your goal is that Satan leads you to, and however wonderful it looks now, the dragon will turn on you, and he will destroy you. But doesn't everything look so wonderful? Just looks so wonderful. That first time on meth just seems so great. And I remember when I was a chaplain at the jail, I remembered it was like I looked at all these people in this little jail area where we met, and all their teeth were falling out. And I wondered, why are all the inmates' teeth falling out? Why are they rotten? You know what it is? Meth. Meth, whatever reason, destroys their teeth. But boy, it felt good, didn't it? And you can look at people who follow and the abuse of alcohol, the abuse of drugs, and whatever it is, and pleasure and entertainment, whatever controls them, it feels good for a season, but the dragon will turn on you and destroy you. So you must use wisdom. That's what verse 16 says. Satan will use the world, but he is going to turn on the world. Because, class, where will those who follow him end up? Yeah, where he's going to end up. So he knows that Jesus made hell for the devil and his angels, and he tries to drag every single person with him. So if you follow the world and you reject God, you reject his word, you reject Jesus, and you follow the dragon in his world, he will turn on you. I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to follow my way. You know, it's amazing what I've discovered since I've been back in the working world. I'm amazed how different I am than everybody else. Now, please, I'm not lifting myself up. Just ask my wife. But it is amazing. My motives, my attitudes, my goals, they are so different. It's just mind-boggling to listen to people and how they live. And it's nothing but complaining. Everybody's out to get them, to destroy them. The company hates me. I just get sick of hearing it, and it dawned on me, God, you have changed me. I am so different, even though I have not arrived, right? None of us arrive. God changes us. And they just follow the dragon head over heels. One day the dragon will turn on you. Teenager, if you follow Satan and his world, he will turn on you. I'll just live with somebody before I get married. I'll do whatever I want. It doesn't matter whatsoever. I can make my own way. And on my deathbed, I'll pray and ask God to save me. How many of you know when your deathbed is going to be? We never know, do we? You just never know. So be careful. That is a powerful verse. He will hate the prostitute. That's the people, which we'll see in a second, that follow the beast. Now, let's look at the great prostitute here. Look at verse 1 of chapter 17. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls, remember that's God's wrath, came and said to me, come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters. That is Babylon. Babylon, again, is symbolic for all nations. In John's day, it was Rome. In our day, it could be whomever's in power. Babylon has simply always been symbolic for a worldly system controlled by the devil who is against God and against God's people. So he says, let me show you the great prostitute. Somebody that has been has shown infidelity. Someone who has left the one they should be married to. Look at verse 8b. It says, they shall go to destruction, and the dwellers on earth whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world will marvel to see the beast because it was and is not, and it is to come. The world will follow this dragon. That's the great prostitute. The world, culture, and the people follow the beast, Satan, and they will follow because they marvel at him. He looks so attractive. He looks so appealing. He looks so alluring, and the world just marvels, and it's like, that's the life to live right there. That's the life that lived. That's where you get all the money and all the best cars and the best looking guy and the best looking girl, and you're popular, and that's life. Just follow the world. That's what the commercials tell me. That's what my friends at school tell me. That's what my coworkers live for. And it does look appealing. What did Moses refuse to follow in Hebrews 11? The pleasures of sin. But how long did he say they lasted? For a season. They are pleasurable and they are enjoyable, but it only lasts for a short season. So all the dwellers on the earth who aren't believers will follow and marvel at Satan's culture and his world because it looks so inviting. But look at verses 4 and 5 of chapter 17. What is really his world? The woman, that's the culture, the people who follow the beast, arrayed in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup. Now, if you have a golden cup, what's going to be in it? The finest coffee ever, right? Yes. I mean, when you smell it, you go, this is life, right? If only coffee could taste as good as it really smelled. The favorite aisle in the grocery line is, or the store is where they grind the coffee. And you ever walk into a coffee store? Well, I'm really tempting you now, aren't I? It's like when your nose isn't stopped up like mine, it's like, oh, this will be heaven right here, right? It's so alluring. It's so wonderful. It's a golden cup. But what does the Bible say is inside this beautiful cup? It looks so good on the outside. Full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. It's a system that says anything goes. It looks wonderful on the outside, but on the inside, it's abominations, it's impurity, it's sexual immorality, it is evil, evil, evil. And notice the influence in verse 5. On her forehead was written the name of mystery. Again, symbolic, there's no real name written there. Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations. It is so bad that Satan's world system is the mother of all evil. It just produces more and more and more. And where God says, have a bunch of babies so people can follow me, Satan says, have a bunch of babies so I can get them to follow my way. And as we look out in our world, who's winning? Yeah, the beast and the great prostitute. As more and more and more follow this influential evil system. So far, here is the dragon's world. It is Satan who empowers kings and dictators and thrones and nations, and the prostitute, symbolic of Babylon, are the people and the culture that just wholeheartedly, you know, follow Satan and are deceived, and they wonder at his world. It's so beautiful. It's a golden cup. This must be life, but inside is really death. Didn't Jesus even say to the self-righteous, you clean the outside of the cup, but what's on the inside? Just a bunch of filth and dirt. So secondly today, all these tie together. Hopefully I can, like a shoestring, tie them together at the end. The dragon's world is promised defeat. So here's this wonderful, deceptive world. It's not wonderful, it's deceptive. It is promised defeat. Look in verse 6 of chapter 7. John said, I saw the woman, symbolic, drunk with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Why does the devil's world, how are they drunk and overflowing, controlled by the blood of the martyrs, the saints, and Jesus? Because they hate that. Because it is a light against what they stand for. If everybody's cheating on their time card at work and you don't, you mess up the system, don't you? You mess it up. Because when they look at the time cards or whatever it is, they know this guy's doing it right. When everybody else is going this way and you take a stand, you're going to stand out like a sore thumb. You shine as a light, and the dragon's world is out to get you, and it has to stop you. It has to stop you because you stand in their way. But this world is promised defeat. And it's easy to see. John says at the end of verse 6, when I saw her, this worldly culture, I marveled greatly. He got this picture of all this world following Satan. And it was like, it wasn't that he wanted to be in that world. He just marveled at the magnitude of it and how many were following it. And just absolute influential power that Satan has of people opposed to God's word. Philosophies that oppose against God's word. Absolutely amazing. But look in chapter 17, verse 17. It's great for us to be reminded of this. As we live in difficult times, we live in this world. For God has put it into their hearts, this is the world of the dragon, to carry out his purpose by being of one mind and handing over their royal power to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. Now that's sort of a mystery, isn't it? So somehow, some way, this is God's purpose. He gives unbelievers what they want, and he turns them over to the beast Satan and fulfills his purpose. So in all the world around us, when you stand out like a sore thumb, when you are persecuted for your faith, you are in God's plan. You are in God's purpose. He is in charge. He is control. He is sovereign. God uses evil to accomplish his purpose. It's hard for us to see it now, but he is going to do that, and he will defeat the great red dragon. So the world is so tempting, so alluring, so deceitful, so seductive. Let's see what the church is told about this promised defeat. We'll have him up here on the screen. Look at verse 2. This is chapter 18 now. The fact of its defeat. Look in verse 2 of chapter 18. And he called with a mighty voice this angel, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great." That's the fact. Babylon the Great, the culture in the world that follows the devil, he is given a picture of its end result. Fallen, fallen is not just Babylon, but Babylon the Great. This great world that follows the devil is not going to last forever. If you invest your life into this world, when you die, it's done. It's over. You lose absolutely everything. But notice next, her influence. Look at the rest of verse 2. Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a dwelling place for demons, a haunt for every unclean spirit, a haunt for every unclean bird, a haunt for every unclean and detestable beast. All nations have drunk with the wine of their passion, which we'll get that in a second. Look at her influence. What does it tell us there? Who's running the show? Demons. By the way, there are no ghosts. If you wake up in the middle of the night and you see a white figure that looks like your Aunt Josephine, there are no ghosts. Anybody have an Aunt Josephine? I won't scare you. There are no ghosts, but there are demons. Can a demon take on a figure of whomever? Yes, they can. I believe we have been saved a lot from that, but in our culture, but in many cultures, they're allowed to run amok. But it says here that this culture of the world has become a dwelling place for demons, demonic activity. That's who's running the show. Demons are simply fallen angels. It's not your Uncle Bill who was evil and came back to haunt you because you didn't mow his grass when you were a kid or whatever people say. Not like Casper, unfinished business, throw that stuff in the garbage. They are simply fallen angels who rebelled with Lucifer and Satan, Lucifer in heaven. That's who they are. But they are running our world today. They are the influence behind all the evil of the great dragon who is demons general. That's what's going on today. Now, you may not see a satanic seance or whatever they call it or worship ritual, though they have those. I believe demons like to just kind of stay behind the scenes. Isn't that how you fool people? I mean, if I walk in here and I'm the devil and I look like the devil, you're going to go, that's the devil, right? I mean, if I look like a roach and I run across the path of you, you're going to squish me. But if I look like a, you know, the wonderful hunk that I am, okay, anyway, you may not squish me, okay? By the way, I got to tell you this. Now, remember where I was at because I'll lose my place, but I got to brag a little bit. I took this... She's probably 75-year-old lady this week down to a test. And for some reason, sometimes I'll get the same person over and over again. It's just kind of the way it works out on the computer. And so I get to know them and I talk to them. And so I got her back in her room and I said, all right, I hope you get to eat lunch. You know, I know you haven't been able to eat. And, you know, I always tell people I enjoyed pushing you around. And so then as I was walking out, she was talking to the nurse and she said, you know, I really like that guy. He's so nice. And I love talking with him and he's easy on the eyes. So I was standing out and the nurse laughed and I laughed and I said, that's the first time in my life I've ever heard it. And it's probably the last time I've ever heard that in my life. You might as well have an 800-year-old woman tell you that, right? So I thought it was pretty fun. I got a kick out of it. Now, why was that? Why am I telling you that? I don't know why I was telling you. See, I told you to help me get back where. Anybody? Oh, the demon. She's demon possessed. That's not what I was talking about. Why was I telling you that illustration? Oh, because if I was a roach, you'd squish me. But if I'm easy on the eyes, you won't squish me. There I'm back. Now I got you woken up anyway, right? But we know the demons run the show. I read these statistics, which are absolutely amazing. When the United States government took prayer out of the schools, and by the way, kids, you can still pray in school. Nobody can ever stop you from praying. You can be in the gallows. You can be on a stake ready to be burned. You can pray. Nobody can ever stop you going to the throne of grace. But our world, back in the 60s, 1962, or whenever it was, 61, issued no longer prayer in school. Listen to these statistics from 1962, when that was made a decree, to 2003. Births to unmarried girls have increased 500%. Reported child abuse cases increased 2,300%. Divorce rate rose by 350%. Illegal drug abuse among youths increased by 6,000%. Teenage suicide has risen by 450%. And 25% of viable pregnancies, the babies were surgically killed at the mother's request. Since 1973, it is estimated that 55 million babies have been aborted. And I think of this as well. How in the world can anybody years ago say that African Americans are not human? How could anybody look at whatever nationality? By the way, there's only one race, the human race. How could anybody look at any nationality and say, you're not human? How could men make slaves of men? And by the way, there's been slavery since forever, every culture. Beat them, sell them, abuse them, and then form a club where cowards wear a white robe and a white mask and go and burn down their homes and hang them and destroy their property. Where did that come from? Well, it's right here in Revelation, isn't it? Isn't it? It's become a dwelling place for demons. And we look at that and go, how could anybody do that? It's absolutely horrible. Think of the many school shootings in our day. How could a teenager go into a school and just start, you know, the Columbine, and I forget some of the other ones that we've had, just small little children murdered? Well, here's the answer, is it not? It's become a dwelling place for demons. And then we think of all the bizarre crimes we hear about almost on a daily basis. Was it the man in our city that just got 150 years for going into his home and, what, killing his wife and stabbing his daughters? You know, how do people do that? And then some people say, well, that just wasn't him. That's not the guy I knew. Well, here's the answer. We have become a dwelling place for demons. Almost unimaginable. You see, the devil and the dragon upon the culture of his people has great influence. So now look at thirdly, what's her weapon? Look at verse 3. For all nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have grown rich from the power of her luxurious living. Her weapon is adultery against God. I honestly believe that's the main thought here, but it's related to sexual sin. A conservative report says that people in the United States spend on what is called adult entertainment $4 billion+ a year. Some say it's way higher than that. In 2012, the International Labor Organization estimated 20.9 million human trafficking cases worldwide, many of them teenage girls, most of which are used for sexual purposes. So you're at the mall and they steal you and they sell you to somebody and they abuse you. And it doesn't take much of a brain to realize that most every commercial on TV is what? They're not selling the car, are they? They're not selling the clothes, they're selling what? They're selling sex. That's what they're selling. I mean, it's like, if you ever watch a commercial and go, what was that commercial about? You ever listen to like some old radio shows in the 50s? They actually tell you what the product is and what it does. Not today. I read an illustration where back in the 70s, Oldsmobile came up with a new version of the Oldsmobile Cutlass. And it said it was a sharp looking car. It was really sharp, but it wouldn't sell. It just wasn't selling. And they went back to the drawing board, and the manufacturers and the advertising people realized something. They realized they did not advertise it telling people what they would feel like and what it would get them if they owned this car. They just told them it looked good and it was a nice, dependable car. So they went back to the drawing board and told people, this is what you'll get if you buy this car. This is what you'll appear to be if you buy this car. And the car started selling. Because that's what the world sells us today. If you put on this pair of clothes, that was a horrible sentence. If you buy these clothes, if you buy this car, you get the girl. I don't care how ugly you are. Not everybody can be easy on the eyes. I'm just sorry. Okay? I'm sorry. God has blessed some of us and he has, right? But that's what the world, that's Satan's weapon. In fact, if you look back to many of Satan's, the beast nations, like Rome, what was their leadership inundated with? Homosexuality and sin. It was the downfall of every nation. In fact, what was it that caused great suffering in God's nation, Israel? What was Solomon's downfall? Women. What was David's downfall? Women. What was Samson's downfall? Women. You know, you women really ought to stop doing that, right? Yeah. Sorry. Okay. And then you think about the biblical standard of God's standard, and Jesus approved of it. Don't listen to people when they say, Jesus never talked about this. Where a man is to marry a woman is to marry a man. The Bible calls it a covenant of companionship. In our day, that's just old-fashioned myth. It doesn't matter. That's outdated. It's old-fashioned. It simply doesn't matter. The devil's weapon in his culture is sexual influence, and really it's adultery against God. But look at her arrogance. Look at verse 17. Oh, this is amazing. Of chapter 8. She glorified herself. She lived in luxury. That's our world today. So give her like measure of torment and mourning. Since in her heart, now that's the world, the creation, the culture. Now, she says this, I sit as a queen, I am no widow, and mourning I shall never see. What greater arrogance is that? You know what that's saying? I will never die. I will never be a widow, and I will never mourn and cry. I'll never see it. And by the way, Isaiah and the Old Testament prophets repeat this of old Babylon. Same thing. All of the nations said this. I sit as a queen. I will never die. Talk about arrogance. My culture, this life, will never end. I'm living my life. It's going to be awesome. This is my standard. It will never end. I am God. And some even believe this is what people teach reincarnation. I may die physically, but I'll come back. I hope I don't come back as a pole or a lantern or it'd be terrible to come back as a coffee mug. Wouldn't that burn? Ooh, you know, but isn't it amazing people that believe in reincarnation? They say, well, I used to be a king in Egypt. You know, they never say, you know, I was a bum out on Skid Row. You know, it's always, so that might be true, but what arrogance to say, I'm in charge, I am the one in control, I set the standards, I will never die, I will never sit and mourn. I see people every week dying and crying and weeping. I see strong men weeping nearly every week. I at the hospital, and Pat probably hears this too, hear the code blues and all of that. And then many times I see them carrying the cart, which I pick up at night, with the cover over it, because somebody has died. But Satan leads people to believe it'll never end. It'll go on and on forever. And suddenly the Super Bowl champions and suddenly the presidents and the vice presidents and the popular actresses and actors and models, they are 80 years old and they die. And all of it is gone. Such arrogance in Satan's world. But look, fifthly, the fact is guaranteed. So she says, look at verse 8. For the reason her plagues will come, for this reason, those plagues are going to come in a single day. Death will come, mourning will come, and famine will come. She'll be burned up with fire, for mighty is the Lord who has judged her. She is going to go down. And just briefly, I colored it in green in my Bible. He lists three people. Look at verses 9 and 10. The kings of the earth are going to be defeated. Look at verse 11 through 17, or actually verse 11. The merchants of the earth will be defeated. Jump down to verse 17b. All the shipmasters and seafaring men, sailors and all, they will be defeated. But look at verse 14. And I think this is related to all three of those that I mentioned. All of the powerful kings that follow Satan, all those that are making money off of what the king and Satan follows, and all those that bring it on ships or in our day, trains and trucks, whatever it is, who say, I'll never die and my life goes on forever. Look at verse 14. The fruit for which your soul longed has gone from you, and all your delicacies and your splendors are lost to you, and they shall never be found again. Isn't that amazing? In my Bible, I highlighted four things. Notice verse 7 that the arrogant says, I'll never die. It'll never end. But notice in verse 8, God says, in a single day. At the end of verse 10, in a single hour. In verse 17, in a single hour. Verse 19 at the end of it, for in a single hour. They said, I'll never die. But God says, it'll be so swift you won't see it coming. In a single moment, I'm going to end everything you live for. But notice also, it's repeated four times. What'll happen to these kings, these merchants, and the ones that bring what they sell, these evil things? In verse 9, they will weep and wail over the city, the culture. Look at verse 14. The fruit for which you long for is gone forever. Look at verse 15. The merchants of those wares, there's weeping and mourning aloud. Verse 19, they throw dust on their heads and they wept and mourned. So over and over and over again, your heart is broken because everything you gave your life to is over. It ends. There's going to be weeping and mourning. But you were so arrogant and you said, this is the way to live. This is my purpose. This is my standard. I don't need what God has. I'll never die. It'll last forever and ever and ever. And God says, in a single moment, I'll take it away. And there'll be weeping and mourning and it will all be over. So look back in chapter 17, verse 14. Here's why. Verse 14 of chapter 17. They will make war on the Lamb, and the Lamb will conquer them. Why? Because He is Lord of lords and King of kings. That's why it'll happen. The Lord will conquer them. And our last point this morning, the dragon's enemy, which is us, is promised deliverance. We're living behind enemy lines, but don't live like the enemy is what this is saying. Because we have been delivered. We rub shoulders every day with the world. We live with the world. That doesn't mean we raise our noses up at the world, right? That doesn't mean we're better than those who don't know the Lamb. That just means we've gotten grace and they didn't. So that ought to give us a burden for others. So don't walk around when you see how different you are, how God has made you. Don't have arrogance come in and say you're better. What you need to say is, by the grace of God, there go I. That could be me if not for God's grace. That could be my life. But we are promised deliverance. And we are not to participate. Look in chapter 18, verse 4. This same loud voice who said, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, in verse 4 of chapter 18 said, come out of her, my people. The same thing he said years ago when the real Babylon came in, when God was going to deliver them. Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues. God's call for us is, don't take part in her sins. And if you do, it may prove you're not His child, or you may suffer God's chastening. Come out of her. We are to be different. Not arrogant, not snobs. You know, we don't all comb our hair the same way or wear the same clothes and go live on a mountain some way and swear and say we're better. We are to live behind enemy lines. We are to shine a light. But He does say, come out of her, my people. Come out of her. That's why it just bothers me when churches try to look like the world and try to imitate the world. And there's no way many churches would preach the way I preach, verse by verse, and calling people sinners and telling people there's a hell, because people don't want to come to a church like that. That's the world I believe we live in. We can't do that. We must do what God calls us to do. Come out of her. But notice back in verse 14, these are great terms if you're a believer today at the end of verse 14. My children are called, chosen, and faithful. You want to know if you're a follower of the Lamb? You're called by God. You're chosen by Him, and you're faithful. You endure. That's a great definition for followers of the Lamb. Called, chosen, and faithful. So He says, I called you because I chose you, and you have proof of it because you're faithful. You're not perfect, but you're faithful. Come out of the world. You are living behind enemy lines. Don't be like the world, and you will suffer if you are not. So every day is a challenge, is it not? It is a challenge. When I walk into the hospital every day, there's a lot of things I pray, but I say, God, help me not to participate in their complaining. Help me not to participate in any bickering. Protect me from that. I don't want to be like that. I want to do my job heartily as unto the Lord, and I want to shine for you. Protect me from falling into the world's philosophy of working a job. What a horrible life people have. I feel for them. It must be horrible to live every day with that kind of spirit. So God, protect me. Come out from among them. And wherever you are, it's the same thing. Why? Because you're called, you're chosen, and you are to be faithful, and you are to shine a light and a beacon where people say, something's different about that guy. Something's different about that lady. No matter where you are in life, there ought to be some kind of shining. So we have to examine ourselves every day. Is my thinking right? Are my motives right? Are my thinking and motives biblical? Are my actions a result of my thinking and motive pleasing God? How is ungodly influence affecting me? And it does. If you're honest, it'll affect you. Isn't it easy to jump on board? You know, teenagers, you're standing out in the hallway waiting for your science class to start, and all of a sudden some girl starts wailing on another girl. What's it easy to do? Or jump right in or watch or, you know. Isn't it easy? You know, you're out on the playground. Well, I guess you don't go on the playground, do you? The younger ones go on the playground, you know. I mean, you're complaining at work, and it's just so easy to jump right in. No. Don't let the evil world influence you. John said he marveled at it. Be very, very careful. And we will find ourselves failing, right? We find ourselves failing all the time. So repent, confess it. Well, let's land the plane here. We've been put behind enemy lines. We're not to be influenced by its power and appeal. We are to separate ourselves and hopefully reach others with this life-changing gospel. And if we don't reach anybody, we're still to stay holy and be willing to suffer. But when those gliders went in behind enemy lines, they knew it. And they knew they were attacked. And they knew they had to stay different and reach their objective. If you're here today and you're following the devil, this is what will happen to you in verse 14. The fruit for which you long for will be gone. Your delicacies, your splendors will be lost, never to be found again. If you jump over to verse 21 and 18. Babylon, the great city, will be thrown down with violence and be found no more. No more music. The sound of the harpists, musicians, flute players, trumpeters will be heard in you no more. Music's gone. Any craftsman of the craft will be found in you no more. No more building, no more construction, no more building towers and buildings and to push your wares and goods. The sound of the mill will be heard in you no more. The light of a lamp will shine in you no more. The voice of the bridegroom and bride will be heard in you no more. No more marrying, no more families. It's gone. The merchants were the great ones of the earth, and all the nations will be deceived by your sorcery. No more. Everything you live for, no more. Gone, gone, gone. Satan promised you everything here. When there's coming a day, it'll be gone. It'll be no more. Great, great tragedy. And you must remember, if you're following the devil, the principle of verse 16 of chapter 17, the devil will turn on you. He'll turn on you and he'll destroy you. But he won't tell you that until that day. So you need to believe it now. If you're a follower of the Lamb today, we're to be rejoicing in verse 20 of chapter 18. Rejoice over Babylon, O heaven. And you saints and apostles and prophets, for God has given judgment for you against her. God will avenge you. God will take care of you. And in our day, don't we want to say sometimes, God, you need to make this right. He is. He's going to make it right in his day and in his time. And we shall rejoice. I want to close with the verses that Maggie read for us. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who builds his house on a rock. The rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain fell, the floods came, the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell. But not only did it fall, Jesus said, and great the fall of it. Fallen, fallen is Satan's world. Father in heaven, thank you for your grace that has reached into our life. If there's anyone here today that has been deceived by the devil and following the devil, only you can open up the heart and let them see the deception that the devil and the world has fooled them with. Save them today. Help them to see Jesus' death on the cross as payment for their sin. Help them to repent and turn to Christ and to follow the Lamb today. For those of us who are followers of the Lamb, forgive us for our many failures and help us, Lord, to come out from this world to be separate, but yet to shine as a light that we might reach others. We pray this by faith in Christ's precious name. Amen.